This podcast is part of the Game and Entertainment Network. Visit tgenetwork.net to find the latest episodes from all our shows.
Welcome to another edition of the TGen Tribunal. We've got some members here of TGen, and I'm just winging this intro. So, you know, hi, everybody. Thanks for coming and being part of this. We've got Sel, we've got Ari, we've got Roger. Let's start with Sel. Hi, Sel.
Hey, Lior. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you. We're a very international podcast today, I was saying earlier.
We are.
It's fun. And you pointed out there's no Americans here. So.
Yeah, we can talk bad about Americans.
You know what? They're candy. It's awful. I'm just going to say that right now.
Totally.
We also have Ari here representing Australia. Hey, Ari.
How's it going, love? That was my best of the accent. Yes.
That was amazing. I heard you had a runaway dog.
Oh, I called the poor Shank Redemption because she's constantly digging holes everywhere. And not just like tiny holes under the fence, but like these long digging tunnels to get out like under wooden barriers and all this kind of stuff. It's crazy. And yesterday she got stuck. So she was halfway underneath the fence, like this big, you know, fence. And she's just wedged in there like anything. So I had to spend half an hour with like a stick digging her out. So digging under her tummy, slowly under her legs and all that kind of stuff. Oh, my God. And she's at it again today, I think, as well.
I have to say, Poshank Redemption is awesome.
Oh, it's annoying, though. She gets out there and she comes back and she's just, like, covered in mud because obviously she's been crawling under in all that mud and that kind of stuff and dirt. And then she runs around the yard. She brought back, like, a dead kangaroo the other day. And I'm not shitting you, a dead kangaroo. So we came home. There's this, like, kangaroo carcass at our front door. It was lovely.
That's probably the most Australian thing I've ever heard. We also have with us today Roger. Hi, Roger.
Hello. First of all, Ari, why not watch The Great Escape with the dog? And then they'll hopefully learn that you need to shore up your escape tunnels, just like Charles Bronson.
Yes. We usually have to dig further off down to shore it up. She's not doing that. She just kind of squeezes through where she can.
Oh, rename the dog Ives the Mole.
I can't believe there was a dead kangaroo. That is so completely foreign to my life experience. I can't even imagine.
Well, it might have been a wallaby. It was quite a small one. Like, never mind.
You guys have lots of sheep, right? Isn't the sheep like the sigil of the UK? Like the sigil animal?
Isn't that sort of more Wales? I mean, the UK would be sort of like a dead Yorkshire pudding. Or something. Oh, no.
It'd be rain clouds. That's what your spirit animal is. I'm sorry.
Yes. A dead rain cloud left outside your door.
So that's all I got for introductions. We all came with a prepared topic. Thank you, Sil, for organizing us and reminding us what our prepared topics are.
No problem. And I added the little cat eating pizza just so everyone, you know, remembers the spreadsheet, which didn't happen anyway, so...
Well, a few months back, it was reported that this is the worst year for Kickstarter projects, particularly games in general. Like, they were claiming a lot of us are disillusioned now with the process. You know, all of us have spent a lot of money on it, seeing how the process works. And we've had a few bigger failures in the industry. So that's what they're claiming. And I don't know, I don't think that's kind of true. I've seen different sorts of changes with what projects we see and what names we're seeing. I'm just wondering what you guys think of the industry and Kickstarter in general at the moment.
I think we've talked about this a little bit on the last tribunal as well, that most of us don't really kickstart an awful lot anymore. Or I've never really kickstarted a lot. Like, only really trustworthy projects, maybe, you know, a friend's project or something. And these days, I just find it really, really hard to navigate that page. It's, like, so overwhelming. There's so much going on, and there's so many sort of shady projects as well. And I think that might have to do with it, because in the beginning, I felt Kickstarter was, you know, very new and shiny, and there were lots of exciting projects there. It's a bit like the old Steam, which was full of amazing games, and now it's just full of crap and stuff that you don't really understand. And it's so hard to navigate these days that I think people are sort of getting frustrated with it a little bit, not really trusting it so much anymore. That's my feeling.
I can see that. One of the biggest things I thought was, like, there's no big IPs or, say, big name people really kickstarting this year. That's just what I noticed. Like, there's no Star Citizen kind of people. There's no, you know, Double Fine. The big project names just really aren't at it this year.
Well, I think we're at the point, too, like, with E3 this year and last year, where a bunch of, you know, like, Sony-backed games were like, and we're on Kickstarter. And when you get to that point where sort of, it's the big companies that were supposed to be, the whole reason Kickstarter was created was so you didn't have to deal with these big companies. I kind of feel a little bit more like, well, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say too.
That is hurting Kickstarter. I agree.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. That is seriously bullshit. You can't just use it as a marketing ploy or like proving you can get the cash for investors. Like, that's stupid.
Right, and I think more and more that's what it is Kickstarter is just another tool in your marketing kit when you're trying to get initial interest.
I still don't think that's the majority of people on Kickstarter these days, though. We see, you know, it's part of that whole negative cycle. You hear about those negative events more and it gets cycled more, but generally it's still a really good process. And they've been updating their terms of service a lot recently as well to, like, protect, you know, the people investing and that kind of stuff. Or putting the money towards projects. You know, being able to go after developers and people who are just, you know, taking the money and run, that kind of thing.
Yeah, they're definitely cracking down a little more on the stuff that is obviously, like, not scientifically possible. Because there is a fair amount of people being like, yeah, I think there's one. It was like an underwater breathing equipment that just basically looked like a very simple face mask. And it was completely currently at this point in our history not scientifically possible, but it made a lot of money at Kickstarter. So it's nice to see that they're kind of tamping down on that stuff a bit, because it is really overuse.
I saw that one. It actually looked pretty cool, but yeah, scientifically not possible.
It did. It looked, hey, if we could do it, I would be all for that.
Yeah, I have lots of amazing ideas that aren't actually possible, you know, but hey, go fund me.
You've obviously got a great career ahead of you in politics, then.
Yeah. Oh, let's not go there. We promised ourselves we would not get into politics.
We will not go there. Kickstarter, to me, is such a typical product of the internet. The actual ideas and philosophy behind it, most people agree with. And initially, it seemed to work. And then within a short period of time, it's like any other new and innovative process. It suddenly gets spotted by the more traditional means, outlets, mediums, and they look at it enviously. And eventually it just becomes usurped and brought into the fold and commercialized. And you look at Bitcoin will only go so far, because as soon as it becomes a threat to certain organizations and the status quo, they'll put the brakes on it. It's, you look at what's happening at YouTube at the moment, you look what's happening at Twitch. It's the same meat, different gravy. And it's the same with Kickstarter. It's a great idea. It can work. There are some examples where it's worked quite well. But then there's a heck of a lot of stupid, pointless things out there that are just money grabs. And then, of course, as it's been mentioned already, some of the more negative examples that have gone wrong get blown out of all proportion. And I just feel that the fact now that there are consultancy services offering you a campaign that is bespoke designed to make sure that your Kickstarter is a sure thing, is a clear sign to me that there is something wrong somewhere. And that is a stumbling block. It's a shame. Also, I think quite a lot of the game developers that you could, because as it's been mentioned, usually you will get someone who used to be a known quantity who has left a well-known studio and wants to develop a solo project, and they go usually to places like Kickstarter. And we're not seeing possibly quite so much of that now. And I'm wondering now if they've suddenly found that there are limitations to Kickstarter, or whether people are just bypassing it and just saying, yeah, I know you, I know your work, here's a shed load of money, off you go.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it turns out that a lot of those early Kickstarters that were huge successes, they didn't have realistic goals. So they actually needed way more money than they were asking for initially from their Kickstarter. And while, you know, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, of course. I mean, that's just the nature of the industry, particularly with games. I think that might be a bit of an inhibitor for future. It turns out that you can't just make a Kickstarter for $50,000 and create a really great game off of that. You actually need a lot more money, to the point where it might inhibit your number of people participating. Like, if you actually put out a Kickstarter and be like, we need $1.5 million to make this game, it's a little less of like that grassroots feeling that I think helped the success of Kickstarter. I'm just not sure, at least for games, it's necessarily a super practical option.
It depends on what kind of game you're making, though, doesn't it? Like, we've seen those MMO kind of models come out and they obviously don't work. I think, who was it that asked for another $1.5 million recently to get, you know, to publish date? And they'd already taken $2 million. And you're wondering, like, well, that doesn't fit. You asked for this amount of money, you got that amount of money. Like, how isn't it a game now? And then you got the repopulation. I funded that as well. It's not around now. It's just that I think that MMO model, that doesn't work in Kickstarter, because it just needs so much more money than you're ever going to be able to get off that model.
Right, at that point, you know, you need that like $15 a month or whatever from people. That's what keeps MMOs sustainable, I think, and it's hard to do that through a Kickstarter model.
Or you could use Patreon.
Oh, but so many of them are just asking for that initial fund to make a demo to pitch, you know what I mean? Like, they don't tell you that as an actual, you know, backer, but that's what they're doing. They're just getting $1 million so they can create, you know, a working prototype first and then maybe take it further. And that's stupid. Like, an indie game, like, I've backed so many great indie games, you know, 2D platformers, little RPGs, that kind of stuff. And they work so well in the platform. And they usually come out, and they come out, you know, pretty much like they envisioned. But MMOs, it's just not going to work. Unless you're Star Citizen. But then, even then, it's not going to work.
Yeah, I'm not sure you can get Star Citizen as working. I mean, they are making a lot of money, but...
And they made half of that money afterwards on their own on their own site, right? They started with Kickstarter and then they took it somewhere else.
$2 million. Was it two or $3 million off the Kickstarter?
Yeah. And then it went up to 30 and then 40 on their own site. And right now they're still kind of struggling. So, I'll see it. You know, I'll believe it when I see it, I guess, Star Citizen.
I think they just released another ship on their store. I read something. It was like
$1,000
for their latest.
Fuck me. I can't believe people are buying that. Like, who buys like $1,000 worth of digital item thing? My God.
It makes me feel really good about like my $10 virtual pets that I bought at stores.
Doesn't it?
Never feel sorry again about your $10.
I like buying $20 worth of Poke coins.
right, exactly.
I'm okay with that.
For me, Kickstarter is a curious medium. It seems to suit certain projects a lot better, because a lot of the major sort of controversies and debacles often tend to be about gaming projects that are trying to be funded. I have yet to see an outrage about a documentary, or a person who's trying to just kickstart a series of books and just needs funding just for certain aspects of the development of the books, etc. The problems with Kickstarter seem to be obviously centered around carpetbaggers and, you know, bandwagon merchants who just want to make a quick buck. And then there does seem to be this issue very much around gaming related projects. I mean, I'm happy to back documentaries because 9 times out of 10, it's the same pitch. We're professional filmmakers. We've made a documentary. We've managed to fund this amount. We just basically need the financial donations from Kickstarter to pay for the clearance costs, you know, to pay for the licensing of the clips, the material from licensed products, etc. I mean, the recent documentary about Leonard Nimoy, For the Love of Spock, was effectively crowdfunded, and that was just to sort out the money that Paramount and CBS wanted. Once that was taken care of, the project went forward, everyone got credited, and it was a perfectly acceptable documentary. So it does seem to me that it's the gaming aspect again, which seems to be the more of the problem area of Kickstarter. And yeah, you've got people there, I think, pitching projects where their stretch goals are unrealistic. And I still also think there's a little element of sometimes some of the fans, the supporters, have unrealistic, you know, their expectations are not necessarily practical.
I think, I don't know, a lot of these Kickstarter projects do promise the moon and back, so I don't blame the people backing it for, like, believing even half of that, you know what I mean? Like, that's what they're backing. That's what the agreement was in the first place. Yeah, it's a bit idealistic, but that's what you kind of want.
I think you make a good point, Roger. I've known a number of indie horror movies in particular that have found backing on Kickstarter and have gone on to actually be produced. And so there are, you're right, it might just be a game thing that, you know, games are just expensive, and we as game consumers tend to be willing to throw our money at stuff.
We're very, I never
eager
do that,
to buy things. In general, maybe present company accepted, but we will throw
it's
money at stuff.
Culture.
It is a pre-order culture. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course. You don't have that with movies necessarily. So, you know, that seems to perhaps work a little bit better as a system.
I think for games too, they take so long to make compared to other mediums. Like you're saying with the documentary, Roger, that's going to take them like a few months to actually do properly,
yeah,
you know? But a game, even like an easy enough indie game, takes them at least a year sometimes or more.
So do you guys feel that, you know, part of the whole fascination of doing that, especially for gamers, is sort of like a collective ownership of the game? Is that sort of, you know, why would you fund something or get excited and fund $1,000 on something that is going to take 2-3 years down the road? I don't really understand it personally. What's the motivation behind that? Do you want to be part of something?
It's getting something you wouldn't have got otherwise. Like, look at all the great indie games that have come out. Like, Wasteland recently has been completely redone and remade, and it's amazing. You've got Divinity, what is it? Divinity Sin? No, Original Sin. Mm-hmm.
Original,
you know, that
Sin.
One.
Yeah.
And there's like an exclusive access then to these games? Because I'm not familiar with
the
concept.
Well, there is an early access to them, but it's just these deep RPGs with a lot of choice and turn-based stuff that we weren't seeing in mainstream development at all.
Mm.
And certainly not in the style or the complexity that we're after. And that's what these games are doing. And you look at like the MMOs that have been getting bigger in the indie scene, like, you know, your Crowfalls, your Camelot Unchained, and what's that other one, the story one? Never mind. I forget all your campaign stuff. But there's a lot of them that would have been made otherwise. And it is getting made now because of it.
Mm.
And I think that's really great. It shows, you know, that there is an interest there. And if these games are successful, we're obviously going to see more, you know, mainstream, bigger products, you know, focused towards that market more. Like, a lot of people were saying the survival genre was dead not too long ago before it got remade by Kickstarter, or that horror was dead because, and then Kickstarter brings it back immediately, you know? Like, these things are actually changing our gaming culture just with how popular they are sometimes.
Yeah, I think Kickstarter gives people the opportunity to create media that would not be created otherwise. And even outside of gaming, you know, there's a lot of like furry stuff that's does really well on Kickstarter. It's true. If you want to make money on Kickstarter, try and kickstart like a furry comic, and people love that. It will give all their money to it.
Because that's, I think there was like little headphone ear ones that like made millions of dollars.
Yeah. Right, exactly. But the other thing is, I think people do and this might be why Kickstarter is not so popular right now, is especially initially, people felt like they were buying into something even though they weren't. And so you look at something with like the Oculus Rift, which is a nice tie into a later discussion, but people, I mean, that was Kickstarter to start off with, and then they sold that company to Facebook for a lot of money. And I think some of the people who Kickstarted it suddenly realized that they were not an investor. They were just a person who gave their money. And I think maybe that might be causing people to take a step back from Kickstarter because you're not an investor. And initially, people might have kind of felt that they were.
Yeah. They felt, you know, like entitled to then get something back from the later successes of the guys that made the Oculus Rift, right? It set a bit of a precedent also, I felt. Like at that point in time, this was like the first really big Kickstarter controversy, right? And a lot of people kind of, yeah, started really thinking about Kickstarter at that point. So maybe that's, yeah, that is actually a nice tie-in, maybe if you want to go on here into what I wanted to discuss with you guys today. And that is obviously connected to Aerie's topic about Kickstarter and the Oculus Rift, but something much more recent, this whole kerfuffle around Palmer Luckey, which went down, I think, this September. I don't know if you guys have heard about it. Maybe just really briefly, like a summary, who's Palmer Luckey? He's this American founder of the Oculus Rift, Oculus VR. He's the initial designer of the Oculus Rift and one of the people who got this amazing deal with Facebook later on when they sold Oculus for $2 billion, right? That was in 2014 now. So this guy got really, really rich selling the Oculus to Facebook. And recently, this September, during the whole, you know, presidential race in the U.S. that we don't want to get into, and I won't, we're not going to talk politics here, but something really interesting happened at that point, is that the internet and the ever, you know, hysterical internet crowd, the collective outrage of Twitter went after Palmer Luckey because apparently he has been funding a certain group of people that are pro-Trump. It's a political organization that's called Nimble America, apparently, and they're kind of organized on Reddit, and people found out, someone found out that Palmer Luckey is one of the guys who secretly or anonymously, rather, funded this whole organization. And what they're doing is basically they're releasing shit posts about Hillary Clinton and
dank memes. That's how they put it.
Dank memes. Exactly. So they're just, you know, trying to influence the whole presidential race, and they're very pro-Trump. And there was this huge outrage around, you know, Palmer Luckey doing this, and people went after him and condemning him for doing it. Also because, you know, he was really not, not reacting maybe in a very transparent way at the time, which might have been, part of the reason why people didn't have a lot of nice things to say about him.
I don't think it's just that he was like being decisive about it, more that just exactly what he was like actually putting money towards. If you just gave your money to Trump campaign, like people wouldn't bat an eyelash. Yeah, okay, you support Trump, whoop-de-doo. Exactly. But to actually support this, what amounts to a harassment group, you know what I mean? That's exactly the issue there. Like, why give money to a group that's all about spreading hate online? And some of the stuff they created is very like anti-Muslim, anti-Jew, very racist and sexist. Like, this stuff is not nice stuff, and they're not nice people. So I think that was the bigger issue there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a group that's sort of associated with this alt-right movement that is, as you said, pretty much a hateful bunch of white dudes, I assume. But I thought it sparked an interesting discussion because a lot of people were starting to think, you know, about the political alignment of people that they might fund or developers behind games that they're buying or putting money into. And you had these discussions going on so many different sites. And I just really enjoyed reading the comments because some people were very much, you know, he can do whatever he wants, even if he wants to fund a hateful campaign against Hillary Clinton or, you know, wants to associate with a bunch of dirtbags, he can do that and it's his money to do so. And other people went like, well, no, you know, it changes things for me. I'm never going to buy an Oculus Rift anymore and things like that. And I thought it's interesting how we feel about a product once we know what someone does with the money that he might have made with us selling it to us. And I was wondering if you guys have any feelings about that. You know, do you want to know what happens with the money that you put into a game, a project, a Kickstarter? Do you want to know about the political alignment of the people behind that product?
I think it is virtually impossible to be an active member of modern society and not have your money go to someone who has beliefs that you find abhorrent. It's absolutely impossible. That being said, I think it is everyone's right to pick and choose and to say, I will not give money to this and I will not give money to that. In my case, for example, I have a Gear VR, which uses Oculus Rift drivers, and I actually uninstalled it after okay. the whole Palmer Luckey thing. Because mm-hmm. I was like, meh, I don't really feel like doing that anymore. But, you know, I do think it's a teach their own situation, and I do understand that by doing that, like, there's no way I can be a functional member of society and not have my money go to someone who I don't think it should go to. But so you have to make a call on a case-by-case basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think if you want to set yourself up as an ethical paragon, and I don't use that term in a derogatory way, but I am saying if you want to set yourself up as someone who has very, very, very high standards, and you don't want your money to go to someone who supports something that you think is vaguely questionable, you will eventually end up in a cave somewhere wearing a grass skirt because you just cannot guarantee where the train is. There are practical things you can do. If the boss person of a company openly spends money on something that you don't approve of, you can vote with your feet quite clearly in some cases. But I think it's a bit of a can of worms because you're ultimately going to find yourself in a position where you make a stand on one aspect and then further down the chain there's another person that you think, oh, I'm going to let that one slide. And the moment you do that, you've sort of undermined your own sort of moral stance, as it were. So it's very, very difficult. It's very difficult. I mean, in the UK, you have a brand of pastries and sweetmeats made by a company called Kipling, and they have a marketing Mr. Kipling. He doesn't exist, but he's a marketing figure. And it's like, would Mr. Kipling's cakes be any less tasty if I found out he was a homophobe?
Mm.
That's what it comes down to. Right, okay, if I now make a stance on this, I've got to give up something that I particularly like, and let's face it, we're not usually good at doing that. And I just think it's a slippery slope. I mean, you look at any gaming company, they've got a development team of dozens. Sometimes in some of the big companies, you know, you're looking at hundreds of staff. There's going to be someone somewhere along that chain who's going to possibly do something or take their recompense for their work and put it into something that you might not care for. But, you know, there's no way to be an absolutist on this, I think. I think you've just got to be practical.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, Roger, although I would hesitate to tell people that, not that you're necessarily saying this, but because it's impossible to be an absolutist and not live in a cave, that you shouldn't make any decisions at all based on that. Because I think it is possible to make those calls. And it's sort of like vegetarians and, you know, I'm not personally a vegetarian, but once you start talking to people about like animal ethics and you start going down a very big hole where you're eating nothing but like, you know, corn that you grow in your backyard. So you have to kind of, you know, pick and choose and you get to kind of make those calls. And I think it's, definitely, you know, don't, I'm not, I definitely don't want to discourage people from making those moral calls, even though it's,
I think
difficult...
it's just very subjective then, right? You have to, like, each of us has to kind of draw the line somewhere where it feels comfortable to them. It's just very hard to then, you know, find a common ground in discussion because some of us draw the line somewhere else and others, you know, have a different leeway maybe for certain things. And like Roger says, you can get paranoid. I mean, if I think about everything that I own in my house and, you know, where the money went to and what where it might have gone from there, I mean, it's impossible for me to control, right? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I totally agree that there's certain things that I do want to know. And I do feel, you know, I want to control that. And other things that I just, it would make me crazy to go there. I find it very hard to be... an ethical consumer anyway, because I can try as hard as I want to. There's so much that I don't actually know. But once you do know it, and that's why this is an interesting case with Paul Murlocky, you know, what changes once you know? Like, what you know can't be unknown. And that's the tricky part. Then can you ignore that once you know that he's trying, you know, like on such a big scale, you have a company or a developer trying to influence politics and that might not feel okay anymore. Yeah.
I think for me, the last fairly big one and the one that I did have a degree of understanding and sympathy for was a couple of years back when Ender's Game came out and Orson Scott Card made some comments that were, shall we say, questionable in the least about his attitudes towards homosexuality. And then it's sort of like, okay, shall we now go and see this movie or not? And it raised some interesting points, I think. If something is obviously high profile, if we find out tomorrow that EA is giving money to Bashar Assad to do terrible things in Syria, then yeah, boycott all EA products, you know. But it's when you discover sort of lower level ones that you might not have known about, other than the fact that some journalist had a bit of a slow day, so decided to do some digging. It's a question of where do you draw the line? And I don't want to discourage people from making stands. I think it's important that we do. It's just a question of we all have our personal opinions when we start drawing that line.
Yeah, and I think that's the other half of that is we've discussed this, I think, before in previous TGen tribunals or in various guesting on each other's shows. But, you know, we're very call-out culture right now. We're very, you know, one of my big personal mottos is perfect is the enemy of good. And we're very focused on perfection at the moment and, you know, eschewing good. And I think the other half of this is everyone needs to make their own moral decisions and decide what they're going to do as consumers. And also we need to not pick at each other and harp at each other. Like, for example, I stopped watching Game of Thrones a few seasons ago because I found it to be offensive and it bothered me as far as they just are really big on rape and naked ladies and not really balanced out as far as that goes. That being said, you know, I don't harp on other people for still enjoying the show. And I think that's a weird line that we're, as a culture, not really good at right now.
Exactly. So, especially, you know, on the internet, you know.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So other people need to make their decisions. I tell you, I'm in for a moral dilemma because they said this morning that Peter Thiel is looking at buying Twitter. Peter Thiel, of course, is the man who funded the takedown of Gawker. He is a strong Trump supporter. He is basically a Silicon Valley billionaire who spends his money doing terrible things. And I love Twitter, but I'm so upset because if he buys it, I don't think I can go there anymore. And I'm like, what am I going to do with my spare time?
Don't leave us, Lior.
Right? Like, that's
a
serious
thing. We can make a new term with blackjack and hookers and naked firemen.
No, I totally get that. I actually had, it's funny, now I remember it. I just recently had like a shock moment when, I think it was Kodomi on Twitter as well who told me about Marion Zimmer Bradley. I don't know if you know her. She wrote The Mists of Avalon and those different series around the whole Avalon cycle. And apparently she's a horrible person who, you know, she and her husband abuse children. And I had no idea, and I really like this book. And I look at the book on my shelf right now and I have these mixed feelings all of a sudden. And it's just very hard to unknow something once you know it, something like that. kind of changes things a little bit. And, you know, am I still allowed to like the book? Well, of course. And you're still allowed to, you know, like the music of a band that maybe has done horrible things, or you can like
a
movie.
You can still
of,
like something, but it becomes a question of, do you still support them and give them money?
Exactly.
That's different. Like, are you giving money to their idea? Are you supporting their idea if you give them money? That's the kind of mental gymnastics you have to make.
Yeah, so how do you deal with that, Ari?
I like the whole vote with your wallet kind of thing. If I don't like something, you know, I'm probably not going to buy it. If I don't like the ideas behind the person that has it, then I'm probably not going to buy it either. Not that I know their ideas sometimes, but, you know.
So even if the product is great and you love the product, you're not going to get it anymore because you know something about the person behind it.
There's so many alternatives. We really don't need to, you know what I mean? Like, oh, that
but are
chip
there any clean alternatives to anything?
So, you know, like we can just go to a different chip person. You know, this book writer does this. I was like, oh, well, this sci-fi writer does similar stuff and they're just as good, if not better. So, I don't know. It's just a judgment call. And there's so many options these days. We don't need to really go there if we do know. I think the biggest one that I worry about, like, it's Notch. Like, he is just the biggest racist asshole on Twitter, sexist asshole, and it's like, well, he doesn't really own Minecraft anymore. None of the money is going to him, but do you still support a title then, you know? Like, he doesn't touch
it. He hasn't done well since he got wealthy.
I have a Minecraft shirt, and I used to wear it all the time, and now I feel weird when I wear it. And I, you know, I mean, as you say, you know, it's not like Notch is currently making any money off Minecraft, but I just feel like, you know, he's so indelibly related to it that I'm just like, do I want to wear this shirt? I don't know anymore.
But you know, that really raises another issue for me, which is this whole culture of just people being so transparent on the internet now. Like, there's no privacy anymore around people that are famous. And I just really wonder, at some point, do I really want to know all these things about actors and developers and authors? And it's the internet that has caused all of this, right? I mean, back in the days, we knew next to nothing about these people. And now everyone's dragging out the dirty laundry about people that are in the spotlight. And I just wonder, do I really want that?
It's just like an idiot saying the wrong thing at the wrong time. They're openly saying it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, well, that's him, okay. But I mean, there's other examples where I just wonder, you know, did I really need to know that? Can I not just enjoy this book for all time and never know that about the author? Did I really want to know that? Thank you, internet. And I feel kind of uneasy about it, personally. It's just like too much information, you know, about everything. Like,
well, I think part of it too is nowadays everyone is encouraged to be their own personal brand, which don't even get me started on that. so, you know, you're supposed to, we're all our own mini celebrities, right? We're always supposed to be putting ourselves out there and especially, you know, for gaming. And if you're an indie developer, you're also supposed to be a social media wizard and a personality, and that draws people to your game and draws people to your Kickstarter, which I don't know what we're talking about earlier. So I think that causes people to put themselves out there, people who wouldn't normally have done that. So that then you end up with these sort of awkward situations where you know way too much about people.
Yeah, exactly. So I think for myself, I'm going to try and sort of, you know, distinguish between information that I really need to know about something because it matters to me, and information that I just don't really want to know because let me just enjoy this meal or let me just enjoy this bloody movie, you know? It's difficult. I think this is a challenge we all have to deal with in these modern times. And the collective outrage of the internet is just everywhere now. And I feel kind of bleh about it, honestly.
Let me ask you, Roger, in particular, as a movie person, how do you feel now about watching Woody Allen movies?
I feel fine because I limit or moderate how much I dig into Woody Allen's personal life. I mean, I know there's a great deal of information out there about, you know, his, shall we say, situation and some of the decisions and acts that he's done. I flatter myself that I can separate myself from that aspect of him and view his work separately. It's the same way with some of the musical artists, like in the UK, Gary Glitter. very mm-hmm. popular glam rock artist of the 70s, a convicted paedophile.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make his music any less enjoyable? Which is sort of similar sort of argument. You just have to sort of, I think, discipline yourself. You can't airbrush out your past. You know, I grew up listening to Gary Glitter. When I became cinematically literate, I watched a lot of Woody Allen's back catalogue, and it is still staggeringly good. And you can't allow Woody Allen, the human being, and all his failings and flaws and other aspects, you can't sort of arbitrarily allow that to sort of just put a huge red cross through his work and say, bury it, we'll never look at it again. But it is tough.
Yeah, that's one that I particularly struggle with, just because, as you say, you know, his back catalog is such a fundamental part of North American movie making, and it's difficult to know how to deal with that.
Would it change your like recent choices about his products then? Like, yeah, you can't change your nostalgia, your feelings of the past, but does it change your choice from the future, from now?
That's a very good question. I must admit, I can argue that I haven't enjoyed a great deal of his output in the last 15 years. But there again, you can say that.
Oh, they haven't been as good yet. But I just mean in general, artists from the past and the future.
Interestingly enough, that's kind of where I've drawn the line where I'm satisfied with, is I have not seen any of his movies since some of the allegations were made about him. And that is just the moral compromise that I'm comfortable with. Somehow the old stuff is, you know, nostalgic and it's in its place, but I can't do the new stuff. Mm. I mean, to be fair, I'm probably not missing out on some great movies that way. So, particularly with Woody Allen, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic. We could probably go on forever, but yeah.
But we can't.
No definite solutions here. Yeah.
I think everybody get off Twitter. That's the answer to everything.
I always feel, you know, I have to be careful. Do not finger point too much as well, because there's a fine line to hypocrisy at some point, because everyone has, you know, something probably in their life that they wouldn't want the internet to know. So there's that. Obviously not on the same level maybe as Woody Allen or Marion Zimmer Bradley, to be fair. But still, you know, I kind of feel that people are a little bit entitled to their privacy as well. But maybe you're not if you're in the spotlight. I'm not sure. I'm glad I'm not.
Right.
Anyway, Roger, what do you have for us?
Quite a difficult subject, really, because in some respects it's sort of quite pertinent to my own situation. This is something that I have observed and something that resonates with me, so I'm going to put it out there. Everyone who's participating on this podcast has been blogging for a while, good many years, has been podcasting, has been very active in social media, and we've all been part of a sort of broad sort of gaming community, and we've had our fingers in several of other pies, and there's been quite a lot of crossover, and we've spent a substantial amount of time in a sort of online social environment. And to me, it's a situation of, initially, when you get involved with so many things, it's very exciting. You meet new people. It's very engaging. It's very you feed off other people's enthusiasm. You guest on a podcast and you think, oh, that was great. I think I would like to go and do one myself. And so many shows have sprung up and blog posts and people respond to other people's. And for a certain amount of time, there has been, I'd say, in the last decade, a really nice group of independent bloggers talking about gaming, talking about aspects of popular culture. Sometimes they would debate interesting subjects, difficult subjects, and deign to tackle them and throw ideas out there in the public domain. And it was really good. It felt like it was having a positive effect, and it was, sounds a bit grandiose, it was a force for good in a certain way. And what seems to have happened from my perspective, and I'm very interested to hear what other people have to say, is that in recent years, everyone gets older. As you get older, your life changes, other factors impinge upon your life, perfectly normal things, relationships, work, careers, children, in my case, parents, illness, things like that, things that are just a natural part of life. But then, as well as this natural sort of course of change, maybe there's also the fact that the world now is changing. You know, you've got the term post-factual world now, where there is no agreement to disagree. It's binary views, binary bylines. Anyone who doesn't toe the party line or toe the line or the ideology is an enemy and has to be crushed underfoot. That coupled with me culture, it's making it increasingly difficult to sort of participate and socialize and share in a social environment where so many people now don't want to behave in a social manner, don't want to engage in debate. They're looking for upset. And it has an impact upon people that want to engage. And in my case, it's slowly putting the brakes on my creative output. I am more reticent now to blog, particularly about certain subjects. I certainly won't discuss the latest controversies in gaming because everyone just piles in and nothing seems to get achieved apart from a lot of unpleasantness. And to my mind, although this is something that happens across multiple hobbies, pastimes, outlooks, social groups, it seems to be totally, if you want a microcosm, it's there in gaming culture. And that is my current sort of concern, because it does everything go this way? Is there anything that we can do to stop this process, or is this just an inevitability? And I've really killed the mood because it's gone really quiet.
I think the problem is, like, a lot of us moderates, like, you know, I think the majority of people are, like, you know, swing in the middle area of any sort of debate kind of thing, but you don't really add your conversation to it as much because you've got those two extremes bickering at each other. But if we did, you'd have that more, you know, calmer style of, you know, more diverse debate. But because you see people bickering about, you know, the extremes of certain ideologies, you just don't worry about it so much.
I just feel like you say, you know, we have these extremes now where people are bickering all the time. But at the same time, I feel like people aren't actually discussing things anymore. It's not intelligent discussion, like Roger said. I feel like people are not listening to each other anymore. There's a lot more self-righteousness, maybe. There is so much policing of debate right now. And I feel that as well. I think a lot of bloggers and people that are on Twitter as well have talked about this lately. Actually, a lot of friends that I have on Twitter are saying, you know, I'm so fed up with this culture of collective outrage and finger pointing and taking offense. And I can't even formulate thoughts anymore. Maybe immature thoughts. It doesn't matter. I can't really say what I think anymore for fear of being dragged into something that I'm not, you know, that I'm definitely not. And it's really gotten to the point where I have people in my private life who are, you know, kind of changing sides now, like radically, and are sort of siding with forces that I personally don't think, you know, you should be siding with, but I see why. Because right now, and I think that's the internet mostly, Roger, I don't really feel like in my real life it happens so much. I think there's a lot more moderate and intelligent debate face to face, but on the internet, it's gotten to this really toxic point where it's just shouting and condemning different viewpoints. And I find that really difficult as well, personally.
I mean, it might not necessarily be the same everywhere. I mean, maybe I have a slightly skewed view because, again, I didn't want to make this in any way drag politics into it, but let's just say there was a minor little political referendum in the UK recently and the results surprised a lot of people. And it has shown a sort of marked change in how people discuss and interact with each other, and it's become a lot more hostile.
I have started suspecting, and I might be wrong on this, but I feel like there also might be just a difference in age, and perhaps that the kids today, not that everyone attending here are necessarily older like I am, but the kids today, that's just sort of the culture of the younger generation. Mm-hmm. And I think the culture of the people who were a little older when the internet first came out, you know, were much more like back in the day in the very long dark ages of the internet, you know, there was lots of Usenet and lots of discussion and lots of text-based conversation. And I feel that nowadays it's much more like snap judgments and macros, image macros and dank memes. And that's much more for the younger generation, how they maybe they don't prefer to communicate that way, but how their culture has ended up being. And I think part of this is just, I'm just getting kind of old and I'm just not a part of that. And it has made me kind of sit back and reflect on, as far as my creative output, you know, I need to make more of an effort to find the right audience for me, which tends to be, you know, a bit of an older, more sedate crowd.
I think part of it at the moment is, as like a culture, Western culture, we are facing certain like larger systemic issues, you know what I mean? That have been constantly brought to the fore, constantly being argued and baited against, that, you know, many people do feel very strongly about, me included. And it's, I think it's that kind of, I don't know, that kind of debate around that systemic issue that's, you know, corrupting, I guess, the conversation that happens normally. Those sort of feelings and those ways of being in that debate, being in that conversation, do cloud how we do go about other conversations and debates as well. Not to mention it's made certain groups and certain people like a lot more, you know, angry, I guess.
Less forgiving, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what Lior said as well, and I agree with that. You know, age definitely plays a part. I think that maybe the younger generation that it is has this mob mentality a bit more as well. And it's sort of certain positions are just sort of a given these days. And if you dare at all to have a conversation about certain topics, even if it's just like a nuance that you want to discuss, you can really fight yourself on the receiving end of a lot of hostility. And I personally come from, you know, a political background maybe, or also a country that really wants to have a discussion on anything and is sort of trying to be respectful and representative of a lot of different viewpoints, because it's so important to allow dissent. Even if you think it's horrible that someone thinks that way, you still have to allow it. For people to make the whole process, the whole journey doesn't happen anymore if you don't allow this kind of dissent and even maybe sometimes very uncomfortable opinions. I don't like it either. You know, I think I've contributed a bit to this in the past as well, that in some topics, especially, let's say, you know, representation of women in video games, for instance, at some point I got really frustrated and impatient with people that weren't so far on the journey as I was, like so far ahead maybe. And I realized I'm not really helping with my impatience in this topic. And I kind of have to step back and maybe consider that not everyone is on, you know, on the same page yet, but they might be at some point.
I think nowadays there seems to be a difficulty. I don't know. Like, it's a judgment call whether someone's a generally decent person. And it's true. And is this person, you know, trying to legitimately engage me? Are they indeed on this journey, or are they a dumbass?
Yeah.
And
it's very,
I think,
true.
We don't need to lump both people into the same basket of deplorables, as it turns out. We don't need to do that. We can, you know, I think it's good to say, you know, okay, well, this person is still on their journey, and this person has gone through their journey and is an asshole.
Yeah.
And I think we don't have to treat everyone the same way. But I do find, like, I hate this because I love the things that people get upset about now. Like, you know, I love that we're talking more about like representation, we're talking more about people of color, you know, we're talking more about of all these issues that are, you know, really important issues, and I think that's really cool, and that's a nice movement in of our society to go in that direction. But on the other hand, like, as a blogger, it is really hard to write a blog with an opinion nowadays. Like, I find myself constantly feeling like I need to couch everything I say in, you know, some people do that. Like, I can't ever come out and just be like, here's my opinion, handle it.
Yeah. We used to be able to do that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I still kind of do it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you do. You do, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
It's definitely, and it's taken some of the fun. I mean, I necessarily like gaming. I don't have a lot to say about gaming anymore anyway, but just in general with blogging, it's taken some of the fun out of it that I feel I constantly need to vet and couch my language in very...
Or add a disclaimer that, you know, I'm being ironic this time.
Right.
You know, a big disclaimer. Yeah. It shouldn't be this way. Yeah.
And it does, and it makes me not necessarily want to bother blogging.
Yeah, I totally get that. And then, you know, at some point I'm just like feeling despite and thinking, what the heck? Either you know me or you don't have to read my blog. You know, there you go.
I got us podcasting, you guys. No one actually like listens all the way through a podcast and gets angry about it. There's just something. It's not a format for people with short attention spans. So I really find it's an excellent format for discussing your true feelings, unvarnished opinions about things. I definitely in the future am going to be doing much, much more podcasting because I feel like that is the future of expression.
I must admit, I do agree with that. I also agree with a point that was raised earlier that maybe I myself am part of the problem because I am from a different generation and I have possibly some aspects of my mindset that are slightly different. I was listening to a podcast the other day in which I don't mind mentioning it because I'm not in any way going to slate them, quite the opposite. I was listening to the Geek to Geek podcast and they were discussing horror as a genre. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about horror movies for the bulk of the podcast. And at one point I started thinking, this seems to be very 2090s centric, you know, are these guys not aware of The Bride of Frankenstein, blah 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 blah, started getting all la-di-da about it, and then I thought, check your heels, Roger, these guys are 20 years younger than you.
I listened to that podcast too and I was like, they need to get me on the
yes. but you know, I instantly started going down one road and I just thought, no, rein it in. They're talking about their experience, and because of their age group, primarily the most fundamental aspects of horror that have influenced them or not influenced them would have been what they've grown up with. So it would have been from the 90s to 2000s to the present day. So it's, you know, it's a little bit unreasonable for me to sort of start saying, well, you didn't mention James Whale or the work of the Hammer Studios or anything like that. So I think there is an element that you do have to check yourself to a degree. But then I just do find nowadays that gaming is a subject that is just quite difficult sometimes. I mean, I have views and opinions on No Man's Sky, despite the fact I didn't actually buy the game. But I have views and opinions on the whole debacle that happened around that game and what was included, what wasn't included, what the developers said, could they deliver, all those sort of things. And yeah, there were some very legitimate points there that had to be addressed. But the fact that straight out of the gate, there were some people went straight in with, I'm not happy, therefore I have to kill your family and rape their dead bodies and then burn your house down and then urinate on the ashes. And you just think, how is that in any way an intelligent debate? I can't cope with that.
I am almost entirely uninterested in discussing games, like on a blog or I will do so on my regular podcast because, you know, it's just with my two friends. So it's a much more structured situation. But in general, like in public Twitter, anywhere, I don't even want to talk about games anymore just because the amount of I just can't deal with people rushing themselves into my mentions, and I can't deal with being part of the culture that you're discussing, Roger. You know, even though we're not necessarily part of that exact culture, it kind of all gets lumped in together, and I'm just over it.
So do you guys feel that, you know, game-related discussion is particularly bad ever since, well, Gamergate, I guess? It's like, especially bad for this, or is it just internet culture in general?
Games are particularly bad. I slightly have my toe in film Twitter.
I think it definitely cemented itself around Gamergate time, though. It kind of mobilized that certain group. Like, they were always there, you know what I mean? But it mobilized and created a community around that kind of hate. And they've been you know, cycling that hate in between their own community members for so long now that it just keeps spilling over to us all the time. And not to mention that they do kind of make those attack groups against people that, you know, they obviously don't like an article from this person, and so they post it and everyone rushes that person immediately. Or, you know, Twitter mentions sometimes, if you put a Gamergate there, you get a couple of, you know, at mentions, of course, like that kind of stuff. So it does make you not want to talk about those things.
Yeah, film Twitter's full of pretentious jerks, but it's not the same as gaming Twitter, in my experience, not at all.
Yeah, I think in historical terms, because gaming is still relatively new, it is a passion, a fan base that I think the people that enthuse about it still feel that they have some sort of integral form of ownership, or it's very much something that they're part of, and they're very, very, very protective of it. I mean, I never hear of major flame wars online about fishing.
Yeah, or baking.
Or pottery. Yes.
Although, let me tell you,
I remember a couple when lures were coming out there. Bait or lures. Oh my God, that debate was intense.
You might try vegan vloggers sometimes, you guys. That is where the shitstorms happen. It is awful. You should go to YouTube. All the hate and the war, it's insane. And it's probably what Roger just said. It's new, you know,
well.
Like veganism is.
The atheist bloggers, man. Oh, God.
Relatively new. Yeah. So, yeah, that's actually really true what you just said. And, yeah, if you ever need, like, Saturday night entertainment and you just need to be cheered up, go for vegan bloggers on YouTube. It's amazing.
I'm going to do that. I really like watching other people's community drama. Yeah. That's just fine.
Burn them all.
Right. I think that kind of actually might tie in nicely with my topic, which is that a number of us, I mean, Roger, what you're just expressing, and with the exception of Ari, who is keeping on, which is awesome, I think the three of us, Phil and Roger,
I've slowed down a lot lately. See my blog? It's just been one post a week lately. It's weird.
That's because you're writing for MMO Games. You're like the main
really
writer
at
now.
The moment.
Well, we've all kind of slowed down a little bit from our previous gaming blog glory, and it seems like we're not necessarily as into blogging about games as we used to be. I mean, that was really the prime focus of all of our online content for a while there. And I'm just wondering, are you guys still playing games as much as you were? Are you finding another hobby to fill that time? And if so, have you thought about blogging about that hobby or different things?
Wow, so many blogs. There's so many blogs that I wanted to have at some point. Like, every time I do something for a while, like, you know, cooking or traveling or, I don't know, home decoration, I want to open a blog right away. And then I know, no, you know, I'm like self-censoring. It's probably not a good idea still. You know what happens? It's going to have like 5 entries and then it's just going to die down. I have a sandwich blog, by the way. Don't tell anyone.
What?
That's an achievement.
True.
Yeah, I want to see this vlog. I'm a sandwich artist myself.
No one's ever gonna see it, but definitely, I think bloggers have a thing with opening new blogs. Oh man,
Have you thought about combining everything on your one blog? No, like seriously, because I struggle with that because I'm the same way. Like right now, I'm really into nail art, which is kind of my new little creative output.
Well, you
can
meld the two. Here's a sandwich that looks like my character.
I think you actually, you manage this really well. You're like, you know, starting to add different topics into your gaming blog. I always feel sort of tied to the title of my blog. And as silly as it sounds, my web address, because it says MMO Gypsy. And I feel like I can't really go, I can't stray too far on MMO Gypsy. And maybe that's really silly. But I feel constrained in a way.
But it's your journey in between MMOs as well as a gypsy. There you go. I worked it in for you.
Yeah. Just, I feel like, you know, I think most of, or Lior and I, and I'm not sure about you, Roger, but we've been blogging for 6 years at least, and a lot of it has been on gaming, like Lior said, and I feel like I've built this sort of, well, or that's what I like to think, like I have an audience, you know, and they're used to coming here because of gaming insight or gaming reports and maybe some, you know, in my case, gaming music or geeky nonsense or something. Can I really then start talking about plants? Like, I'm, you know, I have new plants in my garden, gardening. Can I talk about that all of a sudden? Or is it going to be, yeah, kind of the wrong venue?
I'd read it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure my next one's going to be like a childcare rant blog. I'm so sure. I've even got like posts lined out for it about all the bullshit that happens from parents and that kind of stuff and management and just the stupid shit you do in childcare. I think it'd be amazing. Mm.
This is my opinion. Feel free to shoot me down if you disagree, but I actually think all three of you could quite happily vary from gaming topics and stray into other subjects because, how can I put this? Dolphy.net, who does all the guides for all the big MMOs, that is a person that does just that. And if they suddenly wrote a post about Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton or something like that, people would just go, what? Because it would be so left field. But I think with all you guys, because you have in the past written a few personal things or alluded to other things or during the course of your podcast talked about wider subjects, I actually think your audiences, yes, they come to read about your gaming opinions and your views and your thoughts on the matter, but I think it's also very much about you as individuals, and I certainly think your audience will go with you in other directions. You know, maybe if you did it relentlessly, maybe they might change their mind, but I think you can certainly every now and then vary things, because me and Brian have discovered that we just thought at the moment, you know, oh, we need to write about games, we can't, we're not playing anymore, we're quite bored with them, what can we talk about? Pumpkin Spice, one of the best podcast episodes for numbers we've had for a long time, you know. I think you do build up this very personal rapport, and I think for a lot of people it is really that. It's what you said about, Leo, about personal brands. That sometimes can be a terrible thing, but also sometimes it can be a very nice thing.
Mm. Yeah, it's actually
damn
true.
Damn it,
we're
all our own personal brand.
I've actually, you know, I've experimented with it last bloggers, right? Like, that's only 2 months ago. I said, you know, strictly for bloggers, I'm just going to write off topic and very personal posts. Didn't actually write as many as I intended, but I did actually, you know, there was a lot of feedback. So it's definitely true what you say. And yet there is sort of this reluctance. And I actually opened the Medium blog because of that after bloggers, because I thought, well, I would like to keep doing this, but I can't do it on my blog. And I wonder, why the hell did I think that?
You know,
because I don't want to start over on Medium either. You know, it sucks. No one knows me there.
I did the exact same thing. I also started writing a couple posts to Medium. Then I'm like, why am I here? I'm paying for this domain. I don't understand. Yeah. You know, we've seen a couple of pretty major folks close down their blog in the last couple of months. I'm thinking of like Brax and Murph in particular. And yeah. I don't want to speak necessarily for them, but I feel like in general, the longevity of our blogs is going to be much better if we can feel more free to write about stuff. Because let's face it, the MMO industry is not that exciting right now. Not dead. I'm not saying it's dead, but maybe not that exciting. I mean, a lot of us are playing WoW again 10 years later, you know? So I think just rather than get to the point where one is frustrated and shuts down one's blog, it's better to expand your repertoire.
Definitely. Yeah. Agree.
What's your thought on switching to a different medium now, though, like YouTube and that kind of thing? Or like you said, with podcasting?
Yeah, that's
a good
question.
I see a lot of bloggers going now is straight to YouTube instead of like actually just blogging. Like, I think that's why a lot of the newbie blogger initiatives have been so small in recent years. It's just because most newbie bloggers wouldn't blog anymore. You'd vlog or, you know, do your gameplay vids or Let's Plays or whatever.
Yeah, I feel like that's probably, it might be another generational thing because I am not much help with that. I stuck my toe in that and it's not necessarily my medium. But I mean, I mentioned podcasting earlier and I think that I would like to definitely move to being a majority podcaster rather than a blogger in the long term. So, you know, just for me, that's definitely, but still, you know, putting stuff up on my site.
Yeah, I want more vlogs, Lior. I actually watched a few vlogs that you did on YouTube.
Thanks for watching.
Yeah, I commented on your first.
Yes.
Yeah, but I'm the same way. I don't think I can ever, you know, move on to YouTube personally. And I just like the written word, you know, like I've always sort of been a writer and already as a child, and I just love writing. And I'm kind of sad that blogging is sort of going away a little bit from that point of view, because people don't want to read long articles and posts anymore. And I really love writing. So, yeah.
I think knowing your audience is a key thing. There are people who will read long form reviews, long form criticism. You've just got to make sure that you're putting something out there that has a fighting chance with a sizable audience, if that's what you're seeking. If you're just writing long form criticism because you just like it, it doesn't really matter, I suppose, how many people read it.
Does that mean using GIFs, Roger?
Hey, if that works, you know, if that works, I suppose.
I know how much you hate the result.
I just find them visually distracting. At the moment, the thing that I can always return to is movies and TV. There will not be a day when I won't have something to say about a movie or TV. I find it so much easier. And where gaming, my passion has gone up and then gone down, and at the moment it's slightly ebbing. It might well come back. At the moment, I can quite happily, when I have the time, write about movies, because that is, I think that is the most fundamental passion in my life. But I really want to do a podcast about it. There's a couple of movie podcasts out there that I'm really impressed with. I like what they do. I like their approach. I like how much information they convey. And I thought to myself, I really want to do that. I mean, you very kindly, Lior, let me bang on for far too long about Ghostwatch. I could have gone for an hour. And the thing is, there are people out there that do like, particularly in the movie world, movie fans, they do tend to like quite in-depth analysis and criticism. So there's an actual group of people who are going to quite happily indulge you if you want to talk for an hour or write 20 paragraphs on a movie.
Interestingly enough, I work professionally in content marketing, and the big trend in the last 18 months has actually been away from shorter pieces of content, and apparently the readers are returning to 2,000 word plus articles. It's the thing. Everyone is back to reading again. I don't know what happened, but so I think maybe we're going to come back in vogue, so hang on, everybody.
Blogging is hip again. Yay!
Yay! But that definitely, apparently the numbers show that people are going back to, and even away from video, and back to longer written content.
You know what I hate right now, really hate with a passion, is when you're looking for a guide on something, and then instead of having text where you can just search for what you need, they make you watch a clip for 20 minutes. I could really scream every time that happens, because there are definitely things that should be in text.
Oh, yeah. And you have to sit through like the 3-minute intro set to dubstep before they even get started.
And they're joking and rambling. And come on, guys, just give me text so I can search for the keyword, you know?
Well, it's like that article just came out a while ago that shows that it turns out that people don't want to get their news from video. And all these news, you know, journalists and news stations have been converting everything to video because they're like, the millennials, they don't read things. They only need videos. And it turns out that even millennials, God bless them, they don't want to get their news from video either. They actually want to read an article.
Yeah. And be able to cite from a text. You know, it's just like video really has a lot of downsides. Like the access is very different to a video.
Yeah. I mean, video does amazing things, but it definitely, you know, it's for visual content. And if it's not like visual entertaining content, maybe it doesn't need to be in video. I mean, I'm still putting everything in podcasts from here on in, but...
So you guys want to wrap this up?
Yeah.
Perfect opportunity to enhance our personal brand.
I hate myself, but I'm still going to do it.
Yes.
So where can people find you, Lior?
I am online at liorblog.com, which is where you can find my gaming pop culture podcast and my horror movie podcast, which are two different things. And I'm also on Twitter at Hey, it's Lior.
Great. Ari?
Oh, God. I'm at healingthemasses.net, where you can see what I'm playing, my videos that are current, and, of course, my Twitter, where I ramble and rant as well.
And Roger?
You can find my current movie-focused writing, although there was some previous gaming, and I'm sure there will be gaming again in the future, at containsmoderateperil.com. And on Twitter, you can follow me and listen to my random complaints about the health service and childcare at Moderate Beryl.
And you can find me at mogypsy.com, where I'm not really writing about games so much and maybe more about off topics in the future, because I feel more encouraged after this show.
Yes. More sandwiches. Definitely more sandwiches.
Sandwiches. No one is ever to know about that, you guys.
Roger, yes. Do not edit that out.
Anyway, and I'm also podcasting for the BattleBards podcast, which you can find at battlebards.libsyn.com, which is a lot of fun still. And I'm on Twitter at gypsy_sill. And hey, I want to thank my three lovely co-hosts who all made it from different parts of the world tonight. Thank you so much, guys.
Yeah, thank you for organizing this, though. This is great.
Let's do it again in the future. I believe this is probably going to be the last Tribunal in 2016, but we'll definitely be back in 2017, right, you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, see you next time. Still
I'm
out.
Sure by then my dog would have picked up another Australian animal carcass, too. So. Maybe a koala next time. Who knows?